Chapter 4. Moi j'attends, toi tu pars. Ilya Sea Spider dodges fishing trawlers and cruise ships as it scuttles out of the harbor. It's a marvel of 22nd century engineering, a multi-purpose marine vehicle lauded for its distinctive profile and modular design, if not its energy efficiency. Ilya likes it because it can go very, very fast. He's more comfortable in motion than he is standing still. He's not like Hollander, who has an architecture fetish and a preference for boring, structurally sound buildings on solid ground. Ilya fully expects Hollander to take one look at his mechanical arthropod and make a face like he's just sucked on a lemon. Ilya slows down once he clears the islands, coasting over the open ocean until he finally drifts to a stop. He switches vehicle modes, and the sea spider's body lowers to the water surface. Its long legs fold up and stretch overhead into a new configuration, a framework of triangles to stretch out the canvas sails Ilya deploys a moment later. The boat bobs lazily, peacefully adrift on the water. These coordinates are far enough out that boat traffic is barely visible on the horizon. No one is around for 100 kilometers. The sea spider rocks abruptly to one side, unbalanced by additional weight. Its hull squeaks in protest as someone scrabbles against it. Ilya leans over the side to rescue Hollander, who's made it halfway up but can't quite reach the rail. Ilya hauls him onto the deck, feeling very strong and masculine about it. "Why the fuck do you have a mega yacht?" Hollander demands, and makes the lemon face. "Because she's the most beautiful thing I have ever seen," Ilya tells him, and manages to bite his tongue before he adds anything stupid like, "except for you." It's not his fault for thinking it. Hollander in a wetsuit is everything Ilya had imagined it would be. "When I got your message, I thought you'd made a mistake with the coordinates," Hollander says. Ilya gives him an offended look. "I never make mistakes." "You hid the message in a fucking fish," Hollander continues, like this aids his argument. He scruffs seawater from his hair and asks, aggrieved, "The harbor, really? Century-long capital of bioengineering," Ilya defends himself. "Best place to make a fish. It reminded me of you." He'd wondered if Hollander would be brave enough to show up here. In this strand, in the century, Boston Harbor is at the heart of the Raiders' territory. They'll lose it to the Voyageurs eventually, ushering in the golden age of bioengineering that will one day lead to the scales glittering at Hollander's throat. For now, Hollander is behind enemy lines, trusting Ilya to keep him safe and undiscovered. To avoid examining any of the things Ilya feels about that, he steps close enough to see the pattern of individual scales that disappear beneath Hollander's collar. "We should get you out of those wet clothes," Ilya suggests. Hollander rolls his eyes, but he's just as eager to peel away the neoprene and launch himself naked into Ilya's embrace. He drops to his knees on the deck barely a minute later. Ilya's never met anyone so desperate to suck his dick. Hollander's mouth wraps around him in ways that shouldn't be possible. Ilya could swear his tongue forks like a snake's when Hollander swallows him, although he's never felt that when they kiss. Hollander would probably tell him about the biological advantages of chemical scenting or something that should be incredibly boring, which Ilya will inevitably find really fucking hot. Ilya pulls Hollander off and follows him down onto the deck. This part has become familiar with practice. The slide and stretch to ease the way for Ilya's dick, the sounds Hollander makes when he gets impatient, his heels digging into Ilya's ass. Hollander is intensely physical, in a way Ilya hasn't experienced with any other lover, responsive and hungry for Ilya's body against his. He gets under Ilya's skin, raking gouges down Ilya's back and leaving behind the imprints of his teeth. They've left bruises on each other, dark smudges of color that ripen in the days after the last encounter. Their timelines don't match up exactly. Ilya makes a game of guessing how long it's been for Hollander by the pattern and shade of Ilya's marks on his skin. Every time Hollander breaks his skin, Ilya thinks about contact poison, assassination. That's part of the thrill of it. He's always liked a little danger. After they finish, Ilya lets himself look. If he's honest with himself, this is what he'd wanted when he'd sent these coordinates. Hollander's skin, golden in the sun, freckles darkening and spreading across his broad shoulders. His chest and stomach damp with sweat and pearled with semen. His brown eyes, slitted against the bright glare as he looks back at Ilya, languid and content. Canvas snaps above them as wind catches in the sails. Ilya says, without really meaning to, "You should go sailing with me." Hollander's lips twitch through several attempts at hiding a smile. "Can you even sail this thing?" "What is there to know? You point it in the right direction, and the boat goes." Hollander shakes his head. "That's not how it works, asshole." Ilya rolls on top of him and bites his collarbone. "Maybe you should show me." Hollander sighs. He buries his hands in Ilya's hair to cradle his head. "We shouldn't risk it. We got lucky with Sochi." Ilya stops moving with his mouth still open over Hollander's nipple. He pulls back slowly, licking saliva from his lips. "What about Sochi?" Hollander frowns at him. "Your message about quarantine along the Black Sea, warning about the black mold, the one Hunter passed along." Ilya's voice is tight, betraying too much of his agitation. "Why would I tell you about mold? You think I would give away secrets from our side?" "I thought you wanted to make sure I was safe." Hollander gets his elbows under him and pushes up. Ilya sits back on his heels to give him room. This no longer feels like a conversation they can have while horizontal. "I still want to win the war, Hollander." These little interludes with Hollander haven't changed that. If anything, they've made Ilya more competitive, inclined to take greater risks and show off his skill. "Don't worry. When we win, I will keep you as my very sexy prisoner." Hollander doesn't seem to register the joke. "You're the only one in contact with Hunter. No one on my side knows anything about him. Why would he warn me if it didn't come from you?" Ilya shrugs and deflects. Internally, he panics about how much he doesn't know and how far the situation has spiraled out of his control. "I'm not in contact. He shadows me. I only see him sometimes. He must shadow you too." Hollander goes pale. "If he's following both of us, do you think he knows?" Ilya thinks it's very fucking likely. Aloud he says, "What is there to know? We fuck around. It's nothing." He's rubbing his nose, giving himself away. He has too many fucking tells. Thankfully, Hollander is in full crisis mode and oblivious to anything else. "I shouldn't be here," he mutters. He squirms free and stands before Ilya can stop him. "I have to go." "Sweetheart," Ilya says, without permission from his brain to his mouth. It sounds too much like what he wants to say and can't. "Wait. Stay." Hollander doesn't even stop to pull on his wetsuit. Before Ilya can try to stop him, he dives off the side of the yacht and splashes into the cold Atlantic. Ilya stares at the water until the waves erase all signs of a disturbance. He only has himself to blame. He'd sent Hollander a bioengineered fish like some stupid Valentine and lured him out here to see scales flash on Hollander's skin in the sunlight. Now Hollander is swimming downside as fast as he can to get away.
"Lily, I didn't mean to call you a traitor. That's not what I meant. I know you wouldn't betray your side. Sometimes I think I might, if it was for you. And that scares me more than anything. I don't think we should do this anymore. I don't think it's good for us. Stay safe out there. Jane."
Promenade à Deux, in its heyday at the start of the 22nd century, is one of the cultural icons of space tourism. Built after the age of suborbital rockets and corporate space planes, the club broke away from popular futuristic aesthetics to embrace the glitzy comfort of a North American tourist trap. The interior is lit almost entirely by black light, to avoid competing with the view of the stars outside. The club is universally known by its unofficial name, taken from the enormous neon letters that line a bank of windows. GLOW. Shane hates pretty much everything about it. The lurid uranium glass decor gives him a headache,
His throat hurts from having to raise his voice over the thumping music and crowd noise. There are people everywhere, pressed up against each other like tin sardines. It's too hot and humid for his drink to stay cold longer than a few minutes. There are scorpions crawling around inside the cocktail tables. And those things give Shane the heebie-jeebies. He replayed what happened outside Boston Harbor on a loop during his mission briefing, until management noticed and asked why he was so distracted. Management is too focused on Shane already, and what he can do as the Voyageur's vanguard. He doesn't need to give them any reason to look inside his head. Then he showed up here, and found the place already full of raiders. Landry appears at his elbow, holding a glow-in-the-dark cocktail that can't be healthy to drink. Shane can practically feel his DNA taking damage just looking at it. "The good news is, there are too many of us here for them to start something," Landry reports, pausing to take a sip of a drink. "The bad news is that there are an awful lot of them, too." "Yeah." Shane tells himself not to look. He'll only draw attention to himself, scanning the club for one face in the crowd. The lighting in here makes it impossible anyway. He glances once over the dance floor, at the sea of neon body paint and chemiluminescence. Maintaining some surveillance is just a smart move. Landry groans and finishes off her cocktail. "We're not getting anywhere tonight. Want to dance?" "Do I look like I want to dance?" Landry laughs. "I forget how funny you are. Dance with me anyway?" Her dress is made from narrow strips of rolled fabric. It reflects the club's UV light like a silver screen, shimmering between hot pink and electric blue when she takes Shane's hand and leads him toward the dance floor. "Look at it this way. We're farther away from the scorpions," she yells encouragingly. Shane will give her that much. He puts his hands awkwardly at her waist and tries to bob along to the baseline. There's not really anywhere safe for him to touch her in that dress. Landry grins like she knows what he's thinking. "You could have made some effort to blend in." "I'm wearing a white shirt," Shane protests. "Oh, Shane, never change." Landry loops her arms around his neck and rests her head on his shoulder. It's an angle that means she's taking advantage of the sightline to check the balcony for raiders. She adjusts to speak near his ear so he can hear her over the music. "Do you know these guys?" Shane scans the dance floor again. "Some of them." He doesn't know whether the raiders got wind of their plan, or the Voyageur intercepted them in the middle of their own, or if they all just saw a good move on the chessboard and tried to make it at the same time. He supposes it doesn't matter. Then Shane sees Rosanoff across the room, and the rest of the club goes muffled, like a blanket has been thrown over all the light and noise. Shane didn't realize he'd started looking for him again. Maybe he never really stopped. Rosanoff's shirt is nearly transparent, open down the front to reveal his chest. Shane thinks he's wearing body paint at first. Then he sees the way the design shifts, prowling across his abs and up his torso. It's an ultraviolet tattoo, inked in bright fluorescence. A leopard one moment, spotted yellow and green, then a roaring orange bear. A series of predators on the hunt. Rosanoff catches his eye and raises a glass in toast. His other arm is wrapped around a woman painted from head to toe. His hand is out of sight, pushed under the crop top that covers her breasts. Rosanoff dips his head, never breaking eye contact with Shane. The tip of his tongue traces a line up her long neck. The club noise comes rushing back in. Shane jerks his head away, feeling sick. He doesn't want to be here. "Hey!" Landry tilts his face back towards her. Shane can't meet her eyes, so he looks down and squeezes her waist in acknowledgement. Landry purses her lips in concern. "Do you need to go?" Shane shakes his head. "We're soldiers. I go where I'm needed." "We are people, too," Landry reminds him gently. "You're not looking great." "I'm fine." It's a lie, and they both know it. Shane steps back and lets his hands fall to his sides. "I'm just going to..." Landry nods, letting him go. Shane pushes uncomfortably through the dancers toward the washrooms. He needs to get away from the music and splash cold water on his face. He needs a minute to collect himself. He needs to know if Rozanov will see him leave and follow him back here. He's stupid for even thinking about it. They're both here on a mission, surrounded by other agents. There's nothing they could say to each other, even if they did end up in the same narrow hallway, the same cramped stall. There's a mural painted on the wall outside the washrooms. Shane stares at the gleaming purple scorpion and wonders if Rozanov will leave a message for him here. The scorpion's stinger reminds him of the rose he crafted, his hand-picked memory embedded into one sharp thorn. He remembers the giant Atlantic bluefin tuna that scared the shit out of Shane when it surfaced beside him, several hundred years and dozens of strands ago, which Rozanov sent because he wanted to make a dumb joke about Shane being part fish. Shane finds what he's looking for inside the washroom stall, graffiti scrawled in careless, thick marker. Jane, probably you are right. Talking is a bad idea. War is more important. Sending messages means we might not pretend to hate each other so well. If this is what you want, then good luck with Voyageurs. You will need it. We will not go easy on you. We can go our separate ways from here. No one will ever need to know. For a good time, don't call. Lily.